Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. What if you could, despite aging, injuries, health conditions, and illnesses, not only return to the state of health that you previously enjoyed, but even improve upon it? If that sounds like an impossible dream, stay tuned, because the story of our health is more in our control than we may think. And this week's guest, clinical psychologist and shamanic practitioner Carl Greer, is not only going to tell us why this is so, but also provide some remarkable real-life stories to prove it. The author of the award-winning book, Change Your Story, Change Your Life, Carl Greer is a one-time successful entrepreneur turned clinical psychologist, Jungian analyst and shamanic practitioner. His latest book, Change the Story of Your Health, Using Shamanic and Jungian Techniques for Healing, offers practical tools for reframing our experiences so that we can experience less stress, greater well-being, and even better physical health if we're willing to identify our health story and begin rewriting it. Carl Greer, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Nice to be here.
Carl, tell us a little bit about your transition from successful entrepreneur to clinical psychology and shamanism. I mean, what was it that was the impulse for that?
I grew up in a business-oriented household where I thought my life would be working in the steel industry as my dad had done. So summers I worked in the steel mills and I got a degree in metallurgical engineering. But I wasn't really fulfilled in those types of activities. So I ended up becoming a businessman, not in the steel industry, with that part of my life unlived. When I was about 45, I decided to go back to school, became a clinical psychologist, and after that a Jungian analyst, but I guess I was still searching for a spiritual path that would really feed me. And shamanism was that path for me. And so for close to 20 years now, I've been involved in shamanism as well as psychology, and that's kind of my story.
So your book, Change Your Story, Change Your Life, was very successful and won 3 awards. Why did you choose to follow it up with Change the Story of Your Health?
A lot of the people that I see and have talked to talk about their health. They talk about issues that are concerning them, particularly as they're getting older. And I thought it might be useful for me to write about that topic, just given the interest that people seem to have in it.
So we all have stories about our lives, you know, doubtless few of which are as true as we think they are. Why do we need to create stories? What purpose do they serve?
I think it helps ground us and orient us, but I think what you said, they may not always be the stories we think they are, is one of the rubs. And in my first book, I was struck by the number of people that I've encountered and worked with that are very spiritual, but we're having trouble bringing those spiritual practices into their everyday life. Another group of people were feeling trapped in their lives and not able to get out of the box that they created. And they would say things about that trap or about their inability to bring their spirituality into their everyday life that had a story aspect to it. You know, the story of, I'm destined to failure, or once I get the kids out of the house and successfully launched, I'll be able to do such and such. And so those folks needed a way to first start off accurately telling themselves the truth about their lives, not just the story they wanted others to see. And that same idea applies to this new book, Change the Story of Your Health, where I'm suggesting that people can benefit from not just turning their health issues over to experts, but taking more charge themselves in rewriting their health story. And I suggest a number of ways that they might think about doing that.
So how do we begin to change the story of our health, or indeed any story about our lives that may not be serving us?
I think the first step is to be honest with yourself as to what that story is. And one can start, as it relates to the story of one's health, just by asking yourself the question, what is the story of your health? And you might be surprised at what you might write down. I suggest some topics that one might reflect on, such as what's the story of your eating, drinking habits, the story of your weight, or the story of your flexibility and balance and stamina and strength, or the story of your growing older, dealing with andropause for a man or menopause for a woman, or body issues or changes in sexuality, or the story of how you have dealt with chronic conditions or acute ailments when they come up. So a person can start to think about all these areas and what works and what doesn't, what they've done and what they haven't done. So the starting point would be that. Then the next step, and I have different ways to engage that first step, but the next step would be, what would you like it to be? And then one is left with a kind of conundrum. Well, if you'd like it to be different, why isn't it? And I have found, Sandy, that a lot of times people have good intentions, but there are unconscious reasons and forces that are keeping them from doing what part of them would like to do. So part of the practices in my book are, I call expanded awareness practices, that enable a person to get in touch with these unconscious factors that are influencing their health or their inability to make changes, and have a new relationship to them so that they get more energy and insight to make the changes that the part of themselves that wants to be healthier wants to do.
You say in the book that the exploration you invite people to engage in isn't just an intellectual exercise, it's a journey into the unconscious. That's a pretty scary prospect for a lot of people. How do you overcome any fear someone might have? I mean, I know so many people who are just afraid to go there.
That's very true. That's kind of a leap of faith that there is an unconscious that one can work with that will not overwhelm somebody. And I have found, working with people individually and in groups, that once they do it, the proof is in the pudding. It's the experience that either works for them or it doesn't. And like all things that are fearful that you face into, often they're less fearful than you thought. And once you've engaged it, you really feel freed up, because those things you feared, you find, aren't really as fearsome as you had first anticipated. It's doing it. The answer is, and there's no way to convince somebody. They just have to feel the call to make changes, because whatever isn't working. Their health condition, their suffering, and other aspects of their lives are contributing to their health condition, and vice versa. Their health condition is influencing their relationships and their moods and their jobs and so forth.
So the fear of not doing it becomes greater than the fear of doing it.
Yes. And I have some practices, for example, something I call dialoguing, that allows a person to deal with that directly, to dialogue with their fear. What can you tell me? Why are you so fearful for me to take this shamanic journey or to work with my dream? And in this practice, one who does it can learn a great deal about those aspects of themselves that heretofore they've been afraid to explore.
Do you find that when you do that with people, you introduce them to dialoguing with an emotion, that it's quite hard for them to begin with to get any information back?
It depends a lot on the way it's set up and where it is in the work. The initial exercise for most people is difficult because they're very self-conscious. They don't believe that they have multiple parts that have a consciousness or a voice, and so they say, "Hey, I'm just making all this up." But once a person gets through that and understands, "Hey, but it's significant what some part of you has chosen to make up," and then they kind of loosen up into it. And I have never seen anybody who hasn't done this practice a few times not being able to really step into speaking from the standpoint of the emotion. But you're absolutely right. It's not like a comfortable everyday thing like turning on TV and just watching. It's something you have to practice.
You also have people dialoguing with inanimate objects, rocks, trees, all kinds of things. How do they feel about that?
Again, the shamanic worldview is that everything came from creative energy, the place before the Big Bang, that has visible and invisible manifestations, but it's all part of that infinite potential that we came from and will go back to, so shamans believe, as do I. And if everything is interconnected and contains that one, then everything has that life force, rocks, plants, animals, and therefore has a certain awareness that one can relate to. And even if it's just a phenomenon of projection, it's interesting what the hooks in Jungian parlance, they talk about a projection needs a hook, what those hooks elicit from somebody. I believe, though, that these phenomena that you're mentioning do have an energy and awareness that can be worked with and related to. I believe that. And once a person has tried it, again, the proof is in the pudding. If they have experienced something beneficial, that's good.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Jungian analyst and shamanic practitioner Carl Greer about how we can change the story of our health. We'll be back after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Carl Greer, in your segment about changing our self-perceptions, you write about, as an example, that we might identify with being in the prime of our life only to look in the mirror and be surprised by the signs of aging in our hair, face and skin. I know a lot of older people who say that inside they feel the same as they did in their 20s or 30s, and that they not only feel shocked when they catch themselves in the mirror, but they also feel ashamed at the thought that they were just fooling themselves. But you say that, in fact, maintaining that positive mindset in this regard can help us stay healthier and younger. Tell us some of the research behind this.
Well, again, back to this shamanic idea that everything is connected. That's a view that energy medicine practitioners would share. If that's so, then our thoughts and our emotions carry information, just like medicine carries information. And if we have thoughts that we are vibrant, healthy people, at some level, we believe that, and that belief resonates throughout our organs and our molecules in a healthy way, I believe. And I think the research is that people who see themselves as vigorous tend to be more vigorous, even if there would be other measures, like looking in the mirror, that would suggest, gee, you are getting older, Carl.
So you encourage people to do a lot of journaling and writing, and you give some examples of optimistic statements that you encourage people to write down. I mean, how effective are these really? Because it's one thing to write down a new story, but it's quite another to embody it.
Well, I'm not suggesting, this is not a book of affirmations or positive statements. I'm just saying, what would you, if you want to have a new story, you have to kind of know what it is. It may be unrealistic, but at least it's something different than the one you have, and you won't know whether or not it's unrealistic until you've tried to do it. So when you ask how realistic it is, again, you would have to see. You'd have to make the changes that are necessary to see if, in fact, you can do it. And I'm saying that one of the obstacles to making those changes are often unconscious factors that one can address through spending time in nature, working with dreams, doing a variety of shamanic journeys that I suggest and describe in my book, so that that new story that some might say, oh, that's really unrealistic, becomes realistic. But one has to be willing to spend some time in working on themselves and taking more charge of their self-healing and not turning it over to the experts. I'm not saying that there's not a place in our lives for good medical experts, not at all. But this, I think, is an adjunct to it in a world where sometimes we have competing advice about what we should exercise, what supplements we should take, what we should eat. You go to a doctor, more and more there's specialists. Not any one person is in charge for many people of their health care. This is a way for a person to connect with those parts of themselves that I call, like the inner healer, for example, that have our best interest at heart, and really can help heal us and help, frankly, Sandy, our immune system get better.
Change the story of your health is filled with real-life stories, very compelling stories. And one that got my attention was the story about Maria, who had all kinds of health problems and things happening with her feet and numbness. And how much better she felt after you encouraged her to journey to the quiet. What is the quiet? And how can we utilize it to change our stories?
All of the journeys that I've suggested in my book are ones that I personally experienced. The quiet is a place I encountered, which was for me the place before creation that I talked about earlier, the place of pure potential. And I got to it in a particular way, which I have suggested that people who've worked with me use as the starting point for the journey to the quiet, but then they find their own way to get there. But it's that place of pure potential where I believe we came from, we'll go back to, and it has an energy, but it's the place before the idea, the form of the idea, before the energization of an idea. And so when this woman went there, there was a healing aspect to it she encountered, and she had a very real phenomenological physical result that stayed with her.
How did we get there? I mean, can you share that with us?
The way I did it, and the way I've suggested, one would get into before any of these altered state journey practices, one needs to prepare, And I prepare by breathing, cleansing my energy field, opening sacred space. And then when the journey starts, I find myself in a tunnel, and I'm going through this tunnel at an increasing speed until I come to a crystalline, diamond-like matrix that my energy body goes through. And when I came out the other side, when I first did it, I encountered this energy that I knew was the quiet. I subsequently experienced it as a place of agape, love, and pure potential. And so I would have people get into a altered state through breathing or rattling or drumming that I would do or they would do, and then take this journey. And then when they get there, as it relates to their health, they might say, you know, what message do you have for me about my fibromyalgia, about my chronic fatigue syndrome? And then you listen and let that energy speak to you, however it manifests the answer. And then you might say, what do I need to give up in order to be healthier? What do I need to gain? Those would be the types of questions one might ask. And it's amazing, from wherever the answer comes, how powerful and useful the answer is to many people in many situations about their health or any other story issue that they have.
In shamanic work, balance is always a goal. And so, you know, the book says that when we remove something energetically, we also have to bring something in. Why is that? Why do we have to have something come in as well?
There's this idea of balance. If you think about Chinese medicine, acupuncture, often the thought is you want to put the needle so that a place that needs more gets more, a place that needs less gets less. And I've always been a believer that when you take something out, you want to fill it with something. And more than that, when you take something out, you want to put it someplace. And I always think about putting it into the earth or into the cosmos. So it gets metabolized and changed to pure energy again. And then I fill it with the light of the quiet, of this pure light of creation, where I think then healing can take place. So if you have dis-ease any place in your body, you get rid of that, and then that space I fill with light energy. And because I believe that everything's connected and that intent leads to where the energy goes, and that energy follows intent, you now have something in your system that's going to influence your organs and your molecular structure in ways that are healthier than before you did that particular practice.
You give some wonderful exercises leading people into spaces. You said earlier about the preparatory practices, including the opening and closing of the sacred space. Would it be a really critical thing if we didn't remember to open and close the space?
I think spirit is very forgiving. You know, when I first was learning these things, Sandy, I was really wanted to be so precise. I wanted to do this and this way and that way. But I think if the intent is to honor these mysteries and to ask spirit for aspects of itself or herself to work with us. And so we're honoring, but also enlisting particular energies from, if you're in a particular tradition, from those traditions. I have several shamanic traditions from which I've come, and so I will call in energies from those traditions, but somebody else could maybe Celtic traditions or Native American traditions of North America and so forth, or just honoring, you know, I know there's mysteries greater than I. Come work with me as I'm doing this work. I mean, that could be it. Now, to your question, if you forget to do it, I don't think it's the end of the world, but I think to do it in a certain formal way by ritualizing it, at least to that degree, it potentiates the work, in my opinion, But it's, if you forget about it, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a failure.
So soul retrieval work has long been associated with shamanic work. And I do know a little bit about it. I've never engaged in it. But would you say that everyone could benefit from this work? I mean, are we giving up constantly pieces of ourselves that, you know, it would be better to retrieve?
Well, shamans would certainly say that. I would say that. As a psychologist, I could say there's parts of ourselves that have been repressed, or parts of ourselves have gone, from a Jungian standpoint, into a complex that to bring to the light of consciousness would be useful. But the shamanic work is even, I think, more subtle than that. It's suggesting that our past, and if you believe in reincarnation, our karmic past, live within us and influence us. And if we can become more free of those influences or more conscious of them, we have more freedom of action in the present. Similarly, shamans would say, and I believe this, that we all have a good, better, best destiny. And if we can hook into that destiny more consciously, that influencing of it will, and energizing it, will impact the decisions that we make in the present. So part of the work is you want to be free of past stuff so you have more freedom in the present, and you want to be hooked to a better destiny so that present decisions are influenced by that new, better destiny.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is Jungian analyst, shamanic practitioner, and master of transformation, Carl Greer. We'll be back after the break with more tips, techniques, and information on how changing your story can transform your health and your life. Stay tuned.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hey, I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off.
We'd do anything for kids, yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger near you. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Carl Greer, Jungian analysts work a great deal with archetypes, and I'm not certain, but I would hazard a guess that shamans do too. How can the death archetype help us change our story about our health, particularly for someone who might be facing death?
Well, let's take the people who aren't facing death, but are having difficult making endings of certain things that aren't serving them. So to work with the energy of death to help prune that which needs to be pruned to allow new life or new health is useful. And I have a practice to do that. But let's say that you're facing a terminal illness, and you will be experiencing death sooner than you might otherwise. To have a conversation with death while you're alive, for many people, instead of being scary, is very healing. And they gain a whole new insight into the relationship between life and death. So in both cases, to take a journey to death can be very healing and energizing in a paradoxical way.
I've really enjoyed your chapter on consciousness, energy, and the body. And as an aside, I thought that the metaphor you gave of the energy field surrounding us being like Russian nesting dolls was one of the best and clearest descriptions of the energy field that I've ever read. But I love the piece about the mind or personal consciousness not being contained within the brain, but instead surrounding and influencing it. Could you expand on that?
Again, it's this idea that everything is connected to everything else. A lot of times you might think that serotonin is all in the head, neurotransmitter in the brain, but you know it's generated other places in the body. And there are imaging techniques that can show how brain waves and heart waves and everything, they just simultaneously affect everything else. So I'm a believer that we have a consciousness and awareness of our environment, internal and external, that encompasses more than just our heads and our brain.
Well, what about the global mind or Carl Jung's collective consciousness? I mean, do you think that we can be picking up negative imprints from that that can be affecting our health?
Absolutely. You know, it's Carl Jung talked most about the collective unconscious, where a shaman would say, at some level, everything is connected to everything else, which I believe. But you were saying collective consciousness, and I think there's a certain element that of which we are aware collectively does influence us. I mean, think about it. If you've been in the presence of, say, a negative person, if you're like most of us, that can affect you. That can affect your mood, and your mood can affect your hormones and your adrenals and your physicality. And if you're in a world right now where there seems to be a certain amount of anxiety and fear and discord, I think certainly those energies can impact us physically in ways that can be detrimental.
So what could you tell us about, you know, how we can deal with that, how we can prevent that happening?
I guess there's two ways that I would think about that. You know, one is one could say, gee, you can't keep it from coming in, but once it comes in, what do you do? But I'm going to suggest another way that maybe can help it coming in. So one way, I spent a fair amount of time in this book talking about the healing benefits of being in nature. And you talked about that earlier, about the consciousness of different things. But it's been proven that just to walk in the woods, to be around water, to look at the colors, can be very healing. To lie non-sandy on the ground and just let the ground hold you can be very healing. You know, being in the presence of pine trees, the negative ions of water, to hear the sounds of nature, even if you're indoors, it changes your physiology. It changes your cortisol levels. It changes the amount of neurotransmitters that you have. It switches you directionally from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system, where your brain waves become a little slower. So it's very healing. So in the midst of all this turmoil, one thing I would say, take a walk in the woods. You know, just go to a beach, sit in front of the water. Now, how does one maybe prevent oneself from being as affected? Go on these journeys, for example, the journey to the quiet. And if, in fact, energy follows intent, which all spiritual workers at least believe and pay lip service to, and how that works in a person's life is really dependent, I believe, on their practices. But let's say you believe that. Intend that you're going to get healing energy from these places that you journey to. For example, the quiet, this place of pure creation, say, quiet, help me to be protected from all the negativity that's around me. And then after you've done that, see if in fact the influences that heretofore have been negative for you are less so. Shamanism's a practice of the experiential. It's more of the percept as opposed to the precept. So it's not so much in your head. It's really kind of what you're perceiving. And as a result of your practices, are your experiences being different? And that's my hope in this book, that people will practice some things and their experiences will be different. And it's not just in their head. It's in their body and their souls and their emotions. Back to your Russian nesting doll metaphor. And if these things are all shifted a little bit, then healing can take place.
Well, you know, there's a little piece of proof there that about tapping into the collective consciousness, because I was going to ask you next about nature, and you went straight into it. The thing about nature that I didn't know in your book, you talk about how it also enhances our intuition. How so?
If it helps calm us down and gets us into more of an altered state, by that I'm thinking we're less in our frontal lobes and more in our hindbrain, our brain waves, instead of being at the beta level, or more alpha and theta. When we're not in monkey brain, it just seems that our intuitive parts are more readily heard by us. It's like it's hard to listen if you're not still. And I think this stills you and allows that part of you that kind of gives you inspiration and wisdom, it's easier to hear. You know, people who go on shamanic workshops, I've always been struck, they start to have more synchronicities. And I think part of that is because they're in a little different state, a little bit more of an altered state, that the synchronicities are on all the time, but somehow they're more aware of them. And here's something that I don't know, but maybe in some ways we invite them more when we're more in an altered state. That's a phenomenological question that I don't know the answer to, but I wonder about that sometimes.
You offer one of your expanded awareness practices. You write about the sun greeting. You know, we've been hearing a lot of evidence lately about the sun and how we're not getting enough of it, how important it is for vision, you know, for our eyes and for many other things as well. Would you be prepared to take us through that practice?
It's basically, if you can be up at dawn, or even if you're not, honoring the energy of the sun, and greeting it, and feeling that the sun is the, in some ways, the author of life on this earth. You know, without the sun, we wouldn't have any sustenance. We wouldn't have growing things. We wouldn't have night and day or warmth. So get up and look out. at the sky. Don't look directly at the sun, but just feel the sensation of the sun on your face and let the light kind of penetrate your eyelids. And just be present to it. Just you're in these experiences, I think it's important to not think too much, but just be present and focus on your breath. And then you might ask yourself, with your eyes closed, what question might you want to ask the sun? For example, you might say, what can you tell me about my health? And wait for the answer. You may get the answer in the form of an image or a word, a sensation. And then you might ask, you know, what could you take away from me that would be healthy for me to have taken away? And then you might ask the sun, what can you give me? So each time, just kind of wait until you get an answer or not. And then when you sense it's the right time, thank the sun for working with you. You might use this as a time to express gratitude for being alive and having the opportunity to even do this ritual. It would be something like that, Sandy.
I was very intrigued by the quote that you made about Carl Jung when he said in writing about an indigenous African ritual for greeting the sunrise, he said, the longing for light is the longing for consciousness.
Yes.
That's really deep.
Yes. Yes. Well, again, in the shamanic Inca traditions, the sun is a very important energy, and it's...
Do you want to finish that?
Yes, I was saying it's an important energy that that they worshipped.
Thank you. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with Jungian analyst and shamanic practitioner Carl Greer about the Jungian and shamanic techniques for healing shared in his book, Change the Story of Your Health. We'll be back after this break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Carl Greer, earlier in the show, you briefly touched on the topic of our inner healer. I want to return to that because I've noticed that some people seem to be very good at evoking the help of their inner healer, and others find it almost impossible. Why do you think that is?
I think, as we talked about earlier, Sandy, some people haven't been given the opportunity or taken the time to really practice engaging these inner parts. Part of them, as you had suggested earlier, are fearful of doing so. And if you're really into your left brain and you're very linear thinking, there's part of many people who think, you know, I'm making all this stuff up, it's really not there. So you have to kind of contend with those types of thoughts and overcome them by actually having some experiences in order to connect with that energy. I have found that people who have intended to do that, even though if they started, they said, no way am I going to do it, in every case, they've been able to have experiences that have been useful to them. But it's taken some time.
Do you think that we need to know the cause of our ailment in order to heal it?
Well, in the dialoguing, if one could ask the ailment the question, for example, let's say you have a sore shoulder, and maybe it's bursitis, and you might have a dialogue with it. You know, what can you tell me about you? And it's amazing to me, Sandy, some of the answers that the bursitis gives. And at least metaphorically, and often very exact in a physical sense, people get an answer that's very useful for them to do something about it. Because they could ask the bursitis, what can I do to have you be less painful? And sometimes bursitis will give a very interesting answer. As I talk about in my book, people have dialogued with their diabetes or their cancer or many other physical ailments that they have, and they found very useful information as a result of that conversation.
Have you come across, you know, you've got many case histories in the book. Have you come across one that was particularly surprising or novel, you know, that really intrigued you?
No. They're all... They're all marvelous to me. I'm just, when I'm involved as a healer, I'm basically a witness holding space for the person and a healing spirit to do the work. And what emerges from that process is unique to the person and the situation, and it's all pretty novel for me to observe.
I have a friend in England who is a phenomenal healer, and he told me a story once about a client that came to him pretty much as a last resort with a chronic ailment. I don't remember what the ailment was, but they wanted to get rid of. And after some sessions of healing, it did indeed go away. And then the client came back and said, I want it back. I miss it. And I don't get as much attention from my family now. What would you do about somebody like that?
Well, that's a very, very real situation, I mean, I wouldn't do it. If the person wants it back and it serves them, then I guess they would attract it back. I wouldn't try to dissuade them unless I felt it was really, really, really detrimental to them. Depends on what the ailment was, but. One of the reasons I think that people, in some cases, stick to bad habits that promote bad health or are sick at some level is so that they can get out of things or get attention. And if one can really understand that and see that maybe there's other ways to get attention and maybe that what you're getting out of is not as onerous as you thought, then that discussion within yourself can help you to let go of the need to be sick in order to get out of stuff and to get attention. But it's the same process that we've been talking about. It's a conversation with you and all the parts of yourself that have different objectives.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every behavior serves a purpose, doesn't it? And if you can find out what the purpose
you got it.
Is, you might be able to come up with something else.
well put. And so it serves a purpose, and it's the person's doing the best they can. But if they can have that one part of themselves kind of given birth to, that the inner healer say, that says, you know, Carl, there's maybe a better way for you to achieve your objectives, and you can still get a lot of what you've been trying to get in this way that really now you're starting to have glimmers of. It's not serving you as much as you thought, and in fact, it's hurting you more. Why don't you try such and such? And then if you try such and such, and you say, hey, I do feel a little bit better. I'm still getting some of my needs met. I'm going to keep doing it. And a lot of these changes, I find, Sandy, it's not like big miraculous stuff happen. It's changes at the margin that over time become really lifestyle changes that stick. But you have to be patient with yourself. You have to do a little bit at a time. And you have to do, I believe, the spiritual work, spending time in nature, doing some ritual and ceremonies. And over time, you transform. But it is a process.
Yeah, you've actually used a lot of these techniques yourself, on yourself. Can you share a little bit about that with us?
I've had a couple of, I mean, a lot of, yes, I do this work on my own behalf. Most recently, I was out in nature and looking at the moon that was going behind the clouds and just kind of meditating on the idea that, you know, a lot of times there's stuff that's not visible, but it's there, like the moon behind the clouds. And not too long after that, I had a diagnosis of prostate cancer. And I had done some work on my PSAs, not knowing if it was a harbinger of cancer or not. And so then the cancer was revealed, you know, hidden but there. And I'm in the category of watchful waiting, where I'm having biopsies every once in a while. I have one scheduled coming up, you know, quickly. And I'm trying to do that which I can to see the meaning of the cancer in my life and the various threads that it could take. And by so doing, I have a different relationship to it than I would have had had I think, not done it. Earlier, I had a kidney that had an artery that was blocked, and I had a stent put in. The other kidney showed some signs of blockage in the arteries. I did a lot of energetic work on it, you know, of a lot of different types. And not saying that it always works out this way, but the blockages on that kidney cleared up, and I have not had to do any thing further medically. And again, not always does, like your healer friend in England, do you have miraculous healings. But sometimes you do. You never know what would have happened anyway. All you know is, hey, you did some work, the person did some work, and they had a good result. But sometimes just the work can be healing, even if the illness doesn't go away. So it's a miraculous kind of space that one is working in when one does this work, because it's this transpersonal realms that I believe influences that all come from the creative energy of Source, which I feel has a love aspect to it. So just connecting to that by doing the practices, I think, could be healing in and of itself.
Often we don't think about health until we have a crisis, such as getting cancer or something. Do you think that your book would be enough for somebody who's faced with such a diagnosis, or would you recommend that they see somebody like you?
I think people certainly should seek out whatever help serves them. I would hope that my book could be useful for many people in many situations, but I would certainly not suggest that it by itself would be enough for a person to get healed or get healthy. As I said at the beginning, I think Western doctors are great, Chinese medicine doctors are great, Ayurvedic is good, it's hard to find the right shamanic healer or the right Jungian analyst or the right naturopath or homeopathic physician, but they're out there, and there's some are good, and I think a person just has to try out and interview and trust their gut, and if it doesn't seem to be a good fit, then try somebody else.
Well, before we close, Carl Greer, I just want to tell you that regardless, I think that Change the Story of Your Health would make a wonderful adjunct for anybody who is have any kind of health problem, because it certainly provides a lot of practical things to do so that you can feel more in control, and certainly a lot of things that can shift your perceptions. So thank you. Thank you for writing it, and thank you for joining us.
Well, you're very kind to say that. I've enjoyed the conversation, Sandy.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Carl.
Bye.
For more information about Carl Greer and his work, visit carlgreer.com. Change the Story of Your Health Using Shamanic and Jungian Techniques for Healing is published by Findhorn Press and is available anywhere that good books are sold. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I hope you'll join me again next week when I shall be discussing how we can heal our childhood wounds and become the everyday avatars that we are, with pioneering teacher Susie Miller's powerful new work, The Journey Back to Love. Until then, it's goodbye from me.